Back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, July 8th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. We broke down some new University of New Hampshire polling numbers on just how many state residents would leave Connecticut or are even thinking about going ahead and doing it. New Canaan, Darianne Stanford, GOP State Rep Tom O'Day dropped by the show to discuss coming efforts to change Connecticut's current regulations concerning transgender athletes. Amherst, Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar also dropped by for his weekly midweek chat.
Well, it's a question that undoubtedly I would think, even as we sit here now approaching 10 after 2 on a midweek Wednesday, I would think a lot of people are considering, you know, give or take a few thousand at any one moment. Do I leave Connecticut? Yeah, I like it here. Yeah, I may like the Four Seasons. Yeah, my kids are here. Or I'm an empty nester now with mom or dad or domestic partner. Do I leave? New survey out there. And boy, a lot of buzz. I know Melissa talked about this morning, but this really caught my eye. And man, I put up a question of the day on this thing. Hey, by the way, it's Paul on Connecticut Today. How are you? 203-333-9422. I mean, I clicked to post that sucker, and within about a minute, I had like 20 responses. New survey out. This is the Nutmeg State poll. Oddly enough, done by the University of New Hampshire. So kudos to the folks at UNH. Go Wildcats up there in Manchester. And more than 4 in 10 Connecticut residents want to move out of state. That's not good. Or maybe it is for your bottom line and your retirement money, or however you want to avoid taxes here. But boy, I got to tell you, and I know that crime is a big issue. I know transgender stuff is a big issue. We'll get to that coming up. This, that, and the other are big issues. But boy, I hope the people in the General Assembly and Governor Lamont and Josh Elliott and Ryan Fazio are all paying attention to this. A majority of Connecticut residents says here from UNH, the state's a very good or a good place to live. I'd agree with that, particularly Democrats and older folks, but only 1 in 6 residents describe Connecticut as very or even somewhat affordable. 1 in 6. Now get this. Here's the rub, as they say. Here's the money line, the money quote on this one. Have you seen this? 4 in 10 Connecticut residents, 40%, say they're likely to move out of the state. They're going to amscray. They're going to get the out within 5 years. And even more than that. So in other words, 40% are pretty sure they're going to make an effort to get out or try or actually do it. And even more want to move out. Now, you may say, well, there's always people coming and going, Paul, influx, outflow, you know, all those demographic terms. Yeah, I know. I know. But that number is higher than any other surveyed New England states this month. You hear that? Of the, 6 wonderful New England states we have here, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Maine, New Hampshire and Vermont. I love those regional just dialects that just, you're like, well, what are you saying here? Nobody's worse than Rhode Island, though, but I digress. So out of all those 6, or all the 6 New England states, Connecticut, for all it offers, and it does, it's a good size population. It's got 4 distinct seasons. But you hear that? 4 in 10 residents say they are likely to move out of the state within 5 years, and even more want to get out, higher than any other surveyed New England states this month. Lower housing costs, overall cost of living, and taxes, along with a different political or social environment, are mentioned most often as the reasons that residents are likely to move out of state. Now, I do know people who have moved out. A couple of relatives of mine have. Some former business associates have. They have moved out because of the politics, and that's okay. So listen, if you're moving out because of the politics here, there's really not a lot that Hartford could do. I mean, listen, People enter races, people run, and people win. So blue stays. So if you are going to move because of the politics, that's fine. But nothing's really going to get done, at least in the short term, concerning that. It's a blue state. It's going to be that way, I would think, for the foreseeable future. But taxes, but utility costs, but business costs, but the cost of doing business, all this stuff. Again, this just reinforces something that I say all the time. All the time. We cry and bitch and moan about something, and we never really do anything about it. And again, we do have the majority party in Hartford always. You know, one thing Democrats like to do, and I am going to get a little political here. They like to do, and this is their purvey. They can do this because there's a lot of laughing on the Republican side, too, sometimes, the blue states. But Democrats and progressives always laugh. Who would want to live in Florida? Who would want to live in Carolina? Or who would want to live in Tennessee, like a couple of my relatives do now? Well, how about this in this new survey? More than one-third of Connecticut residents say they would move south if they could, with Florida and the Carolinas mentioned most often, while 3 in 10 would even move elsewhere in New England. You see that? We've got people who are so tired of this state, they're not snowbirds, they're not running down to South Carolina or North Carolina or Myrtle Beach or Florida or Miami or West Palm Beach or whatever. No, they're going to other New England states where it's probably colder because they are so disillusioned with stuff here in Connecticut. I mean, think about that for a second. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. 40% of people in this state, 4 in 10, say they're likely to leave within 5 years. Now, again, I know people go because of the weather. I know they go because their retirement dollars go further. And I know people that have done that. And they love it. I have an old business associate of mine. She and I did some, trying to figure out the pronouns there. She and I did some public relations work together. She's down in one of the Carolinas now, and her property taxes are capped at like $700 a year. And she was in Glastonbury. And she's like, I won the freaking lottery here. So I ask you, let's begin here. And I'll parse this survey for the first hour or so of the program. Fascinating stuff, though, don't you think? 4 in every 10 residents say they're likely to move out of Connecticut within 5 years. Even more want to move out. So 4 in 10 are probably going to do it. Maybe they're planning out their strategy right now. Wait till the kids are out of the house, whatever. Wait till the kids get married, and then we're amscraying out of here. But even more want to move out. That is higher than any other surveyed New England states this month. Well, what gives? What is that? I mean, if weather is one thing. But again, this is what happens when a lot of people in both parties do nothing more than bloviate in Hartford. I say that with all the love in my heart. But this is the kind of thing that hurts Connecticut because nothing really ever changes. If it did change, would you have 40% of people at least, if not more, saying, I'm getting out of here? So let me ask you this. Here's our Facebook question of the day. We've got a bunch of answers already. New survey out there says over 40% of Connecticut residents want to leave the state due to various factors. Would you move? Would you move? Simple question. And then the follow-up question, or are you moving? So would you move if you could? And so are you either considering it, or are the wheels in motion, or the gears all lubed up? 40% of people plus want to leave Connecticut. How bad is that? And why can't we? What is wrong with our lawmakers? This is not rhetorical. I'm serious here. What is wrong with our lawmakers who don't see this? is staring them right in the face. This is free consumer research here. They don't see this. And yet all from at least one side of the aisle, it's all Trump, 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 Trump. Well, yeah, but Senator, don't you see that this survey, Trump, I told you, damn it, Trump. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. That'd be us. Great to have you with us. 100 years coming up this November. How about that? No, I was not around to flip the switch when the whole thing started. And according to this new survey done by not Quinnipiac or not Sacred Heart or Fairfield or UConn, this Nutmeg Poll series comes out from the University of New Hampshire up there in Manchester. And, yeah, in the land of no tax on booze. Yeah, you got to love any state where the state liquor store has got its own on and off ramp to I-91 there. Got to love that. Live free or die. Always love New Hampshire there. Nice drive through the White Mountains, too. You ever do that on a beautiful spring, summer, fall? I've done it in the winter. It's not fun. No, no, no. I've done that in the winter. Passed through there on my way up to Maine. Another 5 hours. Head that way. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. But UNH doing this nutmeg survey. And boy, I got to tell you, is anything going to be done about this? Because it sure doesn't sound like it. Because every time anybody in the minority party or even some centrist members of the ruling Democrats in Hartford say, hey, we got to cut costs here. Oh, no, 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 no. We can't do that. In fact, we have to raise taxes. I mean, that's what we hear. Don't get mad at me. Oh, here he goes again. What am I saying that's not true? Seriously, what am I saying that's not true? And the governor's got the guldones to go out there and say, well, we're lowering energy costs? How exactly? How? Explain that to me. And then when Republicans or Ryan Fazio or even pre-Ryan, anybody says, hey, you know what? Get this freaking public benefits charge off of people's bills. Well, we need those programs. All right, then put it in as line items in the budget and debate it and vote yay or nay, yes or no, up or down on it. Oh, we can't do that. Why? Why? Because you want to continue the 24-hour a day, 7-day a week, 52-week a year financial enemas that you keep giving these people here. Here it is, bend over, boom, oh, you're going to like it. I'm telling you that right now. It is ridiculous. And here you have a poll that comes out. It says 4 in 10 people are likely gone, and more people said they could leave if they would. They would leave if they could. And all we hear about, and I swear to you, when we went to break last time, I went and looked at another couple of sites, and you know what their local insert was online? Hey, Governor Lamont is fighting for you and against Trump. Oh, my God. What are these people going to do when Trump leaves? 10 years from now, are the Democrats in Connecticut still going, well, we're fighting the ghost of Trump? Ooh. But I ask you, honestly, I'd love to hear what your thoughts are here. Because you know what? A lot of people, it's funny, I know people that the first second they could get out of this state, when their first Social Security check came at 62 or 65 or 67 or even 70, where you get the max benefit and you can still work on this, they were gone. See you later. Bye-bye. Here's our new address. Here's our new website. Here's the new phone number. New email. And then I know some people who are not all that wealthy, but they say, nah, I'm going to stay in Connecticut. I like it. And I like it, too, and I'm not going anywhere. I don't know if I'd go south or whatever. I mean, if I could go Northern California. But then again, as the great gods of Fagan and Becker once said, and Steely Dan, I don't want to tumble into the sea if I went to NoCal there. But a lot of folks are piling in with answers here. I got some text messages, too. And also some answers to our question, would you move out of Connecticut? And or are you actually thinking of doing it? Hey, a few days ago, the U.S. Supreme Court, in one of its decisions, 6-3, I believe it was, said, look, there's going to be no national policy on this, but if an individual state wants to draft and pass a law that specifically prohibits transgender athletes, biological males, from competing against biological females in girls' sports events and teams, They can do that. Now, Connecticut does not have such a law. The transgender policy is actually shielded, the CIAC says, and state officials say, by the non-discrimination laws here in Connecticut. But the General Assembly of Republicans, a lot of them are saying, hey, that's not good enough. We should do what the U.S. Supreme Court said other states can legally do. Joining us right now, return trip to the program here, Republican State Rep. Tom O'Day, District 125, New Canaan, Darien, and Stamford. Tom, it's Paul again. Good afternoon, sir. How are you? Thanks for dropping by.
Good, Paul. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Not too bad. Tom. I'm doing okay. Interesting thing, Tom, here. And I wanted to have you on because I know that you apparently, your daughter was a highly competitive athlete, Tom. Is that right? And I'm told that she ran into a situation that's kind of at the forefront now of this controversial decision by the high court.
Yeah, so she played lacrosse. She was a lacrosse goalie in high school for New Canaan High.
Yeah.
And then she went on to, she had some opportunities in D1, ended up going D3 and playing for Denison. And went out to Colorado, and I noticed on the field that there was a biological male playing on defense.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was happy that he was playing defense and not playing offense with a goalie father, if you will. But look, it's clearly a competitive advantage and a disadvantage for women, both from a fairness standpoint and a safety standpoint. And I said the other day in the press conference, you know, and the listeners know this. I mean, how many females are playing in the Major League Baseball, football, basketball? None. Because there's differences between men and women. And that's why we instituted Title IX in 1972.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you saw the number of percentage of NCAA athletes go from 14% female in 1972 to 44% now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's still not 50-50, which it should be, but we've gotten a lot better. And why are we going backwards? It's just not right.
When asked about this, you know, state officials, especially Governor Lamont, he was attributed with a statement the other day, Tom, to the effect of, well, you know, it's we should be welcoming. It protects everybody. This shouldn't be about politics. But, Tom, my question always is, and kind of dovetailing off of what you said, what about Title IX and what about the rights of biological women under Title IX to say, hey, what about our rights and the fact that we should not be discriminated against? And this is a murky thing here, Tom, because, you know, each side is claiming discrimination here whenever this is brought up.
Yeah, and I don't get it. Honestly, if you're a biological male, you can compete with other biological men. We're not saying you can't compete. We're saying it's not fair for you to compete against females. And the proof is in the pudding, if you will. You look, I mean, we all watch the Olympics with that biological male beat up on those the females in the Olympics. It wasn't fair. It wasn't right. And it's a safety and fairness issue. For each biological male that takes a spot on a team, a female team, they're taking the spot away from a girl. And what is Title IX? Title IX is supposed to prevent that. And I heard my opponents on this issue say, well, we want equality for everybody. Well, that's not equality. That's the opposite. And what about, how about this? I don't know, Paul, if you have any daughters. I don't want, I imagine my daughter when she was a freshman at age 13, 14, having to change in a dressing room with an 18-year-old male. That's not right. And I'd be furious. It's wrong.
It certainly does, Tom, fly in the face of common sense here. Tom O'Day, State Rep. Republican side, District 125, Darien, Stamford, and New Canaan. And Tom, every time this came up in the news, and I'm glad you folks in the GOP are bringing it up again, it is, what's the old phrase, Tom? The silence is deafening that you get from some of these so-called, and I'm doing air quotes now, I know you can't see me, the video feed people can see, I'm doing air quotes here, these so-called, air quotes, women's groups here. Tom, they're maybe not so surprisingly silent here. The groups that will always complain about Republican politics and conservative politics, but when they stand up for biological women and biological young girls, the silence, Tom, is deafening, is it not?
It is, and it's disappointing because I don't. What is this issue? I think 90% of the public agrees with us that, and to the 10% who don't, my question is why? Like, we're not preventing. If you identify as a female, but you're a biological male, you can play. Just play against other biological males.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand the argument. And for those that say it's only a few, well, you know what? It only takes one. And we've seen girls permanently injured in volleyball.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I say to them, well, so we're going to subject all the girls on both teams so that the one person who wants to identify as a female, even though they're male, has a quote, fair opportunity. Well, no, that's not a fair opportunity. It's an advantage.
Mm.
And there's nobody disputing that. So I just don't I don't understand the argument on the other side. I want to, and I want to have the discussion. I there's no hate in my heart. There's mm-hmm. no I don't want to discriminate against. I want everybody to play in a safe and fair environment, and that's what Title IX was put in place to do, to give opportunities to women, biological females. And what we're doing now is just going backwards, and it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, hey, Tom, finally, any idea what this bill may look like? Because I know there are other states, Tom, that do allow young men or biological boys, once they have undergone a surgical treatment or a hormonal treatment, any idea whether that in any bill that you guys and gals on the Republican side may introduce starting in early January of next year, or is this just a concept right now?
So right now, you know, obviously we're out of session. I doubt that they'll take up any special session to address this before the fall athletics. But, you know, I'm certainly going to put in a bill. We had put in a bill to take a look at it like the Olympics did, you know, measuring testosterone. To me, it's just simple. There's an easy swab, whether, you know, you chromosome test, you know, XX or XY, and go with that. That's the easiest. And the Supreme Court said that's fair.
Yeah.
You can do a simple test, and, you know, there are differences. And the Supreme Court said there's differences between men and women, and you're allowed to provide equal, they called it in quotes, equal athletic opportunity. So, I think the easiest way is just to do that swab test. But if somebody wants to propose something like what was done in the Olympics previously, where you measure the amount of testosterone, and if they had puberty blockers, which, by the way, I don't think is right either. I don't think any minor can rightly consent to puberty blockers until they're an adult.
Yeah.
So I would be opposed to that. But I'm happy to listen. And discuss it and compromise. At the end of the day, if the other side can come up with a compromise that's safe and fair to biological women, then I'm all ears.
And finally, Tom, do you think that because it's after the election coming up, might you folks on the Republican side be able to peel off some Democratic support on this, or do you fear that this is going to be a hard party line vote?
I've talked as the Republican who runs the floor in the House for the House Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
I spend a lot of time talking to my friends on the other side of the aisle, and there's a lot of support for this concept of, you know, making it more safe and more fair for women to participate and play in athletics. And I think we owe it to our children, our girls, to make the playing field level and fair and safe. And I do think there's going to be a number of Democrats that are joining us in coming to some compromise to do that. And I'm confident that we're going to get some Democratic votes on our bills.
Interesting. All right. We'll check in at the swing of the air. State Rep. Tom O'Day, District 125, New Canaan, Darien, and Stamford. Tom, as always, we appreciate the time, my friend. Thank you, and we'll chat.
Thank you, Paul, very much, and thank you to the listeners.
All right, Tom O'Day, their state rep on the Republican side, District 125. Dan Har, Hearst, Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist, who's been really feisty on Facebook lately. You know, Dan, I guess you're not a fan of President Trump getting involved in sports, Dan Har, are you? I don't think so.
How's it worked out for him so far? Somebody else pointed out that he favored the Chiefs over the Eagles when the Eagles beat the Chiefs. He favored the Knicks in the only game the Knicks lost. Yeah. Now this memo. But the issue isn't that he has the anti-Midas touch on picking winners.
Yeah.
The issue is that I don't see how anybody can view what he did as anything other than meddling. Those who say, oh, he just asked the question. He just called up the FIFA president.
That's all.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Hey, can you take a look at this? I'm not telling you what to do, Dan, but can you just take a look at this? I'm not. And again, he never told him to rescind the red card. How good did that work out anyway?
Well, obviously the U.S. should have gone without
What's his name? Yeah, why not? Why not?
Balogun.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, is a birthright citizen, I might add.
Oh, good. Oh, is he? Well, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
His mother was a tourist in New York from England when he was born, and she couldn't get on a plane because they decided she was overly pregnant.
Yeah.
But she had the baby in New York.
Yeah, it's so, that altitude and that air pressure thing. You can't play around with that.
No.
Josh Elliott's got his first TV commercial up and running. It was shot in my little, when he comes out of the door there in Wallingford, about a mile and a half from my condo. And do we know whether...
Like Middletown. It looks like Middletown to me.
No, it was Wallingford.
Middletown?
Yeah, it was Wally World. It was Wally World.
Okay.
Does he have the $3.7 million yet or not?
He's supposed to have it tomorrow morning, and he told me that he is going to get it tomorrow morning approved if all goes well, but all doesn't always go well, first of all. And second of all, if he gets it approved by SEEK tomorrow, we're talking about the public financing, he becomes, let's say he gets a check right away. Let's say he gets a check Friday.
Yeah.
Right. He can start booking TV next week, but his first TV ads, and we can talk about his ad, his first TV media buys will go up on the air on 3 weeks and 6 days from the primary, in the best case scenario. So is it too late?
I don't know. I saw the ad, the one they shot in Wallingford. I thought it was good. It was bright colors. It was lively. Usually the opponent is dour looking, Dan Har, in black and white. And I thought personally that Josh Elliott got some good biographical points out there. I thought the pacing was good. I thought it was tight and bright. What'd you think?
Well, he's got a good story that he's been a family businessman. He's a lawyer. He throws in that he's a professional poker player.
Who knew that?
And I went to when we went to our famous trip to Massachusetts to buy some cannabis before the law was changed to make the point. And that was my trip that I invited him on.
All right.
We stopped off at the casino because there was also no commercial casinos in Connecticut. So we were doing all the things in Massachusetts that you can't do in Connecticut.
Yeah.
So I promptly lost $50 on a roulette wheel in about 90 seconds.
Yeah.
And he won $103 in poker.
Nice.
Rather quickly. And because he had told me he's a professional. And I said, oh, yeah. But I didn't watch him play. I was too busy losing my shirt. But he is a professional poker player, and one presumes that that's for the purpose of appealing to young Gen Z and millennial men who admire that. And it is admirable. Listen, if you can make a living playing poker, why work? But more to the point about that ad, he gets after the billionaires, and as our friend Mark Pazniokas of The Mirror pointed out in his story about the ad, the billionaires that he used are three of the billionaires, not exactly beloved by the Democratic Party: Elon Musk, Donald Trump, and who was the third? I forget. In a picture in the ad,
yeah.
So it's not like he's picking, Steve Mandel, the billionaire who's a liberal who's backing Luke Bronin. Yeah. That's a different billionaire, or George Soros. There's another benevolent billionaire from the liberal standpoint. So he's really calling Lamont a billionaire heir to a Wall Street fortune, which is not incorrect. Billion, we don't know, but, you know, lots of money. And he's taking some very hard shots at Lamont. It's not a subtle ad in that way.
You wanted to bring this up, and I thought this would happen even before I saw the coverage. The politicization. Wow, it's late.
Politicization
of the storm damage we had a few days ago. What's up with that?
Well, the first selectman of Harwinton. Is it Harwinton? Is that what you're talking about? Harwinton?
Harwinton, yes.
Yeah, you know, he made a big deal. Chris, Mr. Chris, he's running for the 8th District State Senate.
Mm-hmm.
That includes Harwinton, of course, and Avon and Simsbury. And, you know, is he slamming Eversource for failing to get the job done as part of his campaign? Some people have quietly whispered that. On the other hand, he's not wrong. When you are the first electman of a town that has power out for a number of days, you should damn well be mad. And so he also issued a picture with a hard hat saying Chris on it, I think it was, saying, I'm taking a break from the campaign for a while we take care of this problem, this bigger problem that we have, which is getting power restored, which is, of course, a subtle way of not taking a break from the campaign. So, a little, and then, of course, Lamont and Blumenthal showed up and they, Blumenthal is not, but Lamont is in a election, as we continue to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, does he show up when he's not in an election, when there's a blackout? Sure he does.
Sure.
But it becomes an election event when that happens. He may declare an emergency. He may say, listen, I'm getting after Eversource to get crews out here. Eversource, for its part, is saying, look, this was an unforecast storm. If you're a TV station or a newspaper that has a meteorologist, guess what? You didn't predict this storm.
Yeah, good point. No, good point. And finally, thought of you with this story a couple of days ago. The four combatants were in a quote-unquote, air quotes here, forum in the 1st District congressional race. What'd you get out of that, and where do you sense the race is right now?
Well, it was a forum. I think this was the WVIT forum. It was a forum and not a debate, but it had a little bit of a hybrid quality because they were all four on stage at the same time.
Sure.
On the set at the same time, not stage. It was in the studio. And so it had that little hint of being a debate, but yet there was no debate because they each one was able to make his or her point. And we don't have time, nor do I need to go through what each of their main points are here. Right. But they did get their points across. But the big fight in this campaign is over Larson being long in the tooth on the job and taking money from special interest, and Bronin taking money from billionaires and other billionaires, and he won't take money from PACs, and you know, that's the big debate, and how each one of those two men explains how that financing plays out is a core issue in the campaign that must be debated. And a forum don't do it. So we would like to see them in a debate more than just a forum.
Do you think, Dan, just to wrap up on this here, do you think that the race is shifting in any way, or do we have to get past the summer months before it may get a little more definitive?
No, I don't think it's shifting. I think it's been close. It would shift to the extent that Bronin, in the home stretch, Bronin is going to have more money.
Yeah.
We're going to hear more about money. I think the deadline is Friday for money for reporting.
Second quarter.
And so we're going to see more about money, but we strongly suspect that Bronin is going to have more money to spend. And so is that going to make a difference? The other observation I would make is that not John Larson is going to beat John Larson. John Larson is not going to get 50% of the votes in this race. But he very well may get enough to win with 42% or whatever. But if you pit not John Larson against John Larson, not John Larson is going to win. Unfortunately for the opponents, no single one of them may get more than the real John Larson. Will you please stand up?
All right. There you go. You know him, you love him. Dan Haar for Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. Dan, be good. Have a happy rest of the week, and we'll check back with you midweek next week. Thank you, sir.
Happy mid-July.
All right. Yes, yes. Mid-July. That's right. Yes, yes. All right.